We've made it to the middle of Pork Week, and we've got a great farmer forum coming your way. We'll talk hog movement, CFAP payments, and most importantly, what message do Randy and AB want to send to Secretary Perdue and to Congress?
Live from a virtual small-town coffee shop via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Dan Hallstrom, President and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Then it's our Farmer Forum, where we bring the coffee shop to you. Today, we've got panelists Howard A.V. Roth, President of the National Pork Producers Council, and Iowa farmer Randy Francis. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from AgPro Magazine. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. You know what? A couple of shout-outs here as we get this started here today.
All right.
Jim Smith yesterday. I got several messages about how informative the comments from Jim Smith about swine nutrition and the kinks in the supply chain and the maintenance ration. It was so informative. I thought it was really good, and I got at least eight messages overnight. Thanking us for having Jim on. So I thought that was really good. I wanted to give him a shout out, and we're going to have him on the show later, but I'm going to give a shout out right now to A.V. Roth, president of the National Pork Producers Council.
Yeah.
You guys, can you imagine? Well, number one, there's no amount of training that you could get for a position like president of the National Pork Producers Council that would adequately prepare you for what he is dealing with and the pressure that has been put on him.
It's unprecedented, from what I understand.
It really is.
These times are absolutely unprecedented.
We've never dealt with anything like this before, and to be at the top of a producer organization that is really feeling the pain, and it's not just hogs. I get that. It's not just hogs, but boy, hogs are. Some producers are having to make decisions that they shouldn't have to make, and it's happening right now. So, but shout out to AV. He's going to be part of the farmer forum coming up here in just a little bit. And again, another thank you to Jim Smith for coming on the show yesterday.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. All right, man. We got a lot of ground to cover today. You want to get to it?
Yeah, we do. Yes, okay. Let's do. Chip, Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa says he is confident China will fulfill its obligations outlined in the Phase 1 trade deal. This as tensions mount between the trading partners. U.S. Trade Rep Bob Lighthizer is said to be in agreement with Grassley, who cited a phone call between Lighthizer and Chinese Vice Premier Liu He. Senator Grassley said, quote, "I don't have any reason to think that China long-term is not going to keep their agreement," and that's Lighthizer's view after his conversation with Vice Premier of China that he briefed me on, so I'm not worried about it, Grassley said. But Chip, China's been openly critical of the social unrest in the U.S., specifically in Washington, as China tightens its grip on Hong Kong. China accused Washington of hypocrisy. That's an interesting wrinkle.
It really is. And I saw some of that overnight, and I'll admit I kind of rolled my eyes.
Yes, a little bit.
When I saw that, and I'm like, come on. I don't want to dismiss the comparison, though, okay? Because if you do that, you just diminish what is happening in this country.
Yes.
And we can't do that. I won't do that. And we need to make some changes. That's the bottom line. We got to get better.
Well, on Capitol Hill, Democrats say they want to send out another round of stimulus checks, extend enhanced unemployment benefits, and provide additional funding to states facing budget shortfalls in wake of coronavirus. Republicans have called for incentives that encourage people to return to work, as well as liability protections for employers from pandemic-related lawsuits as businesses across the country reopen. The cost of the next stimulus measure is not yet known, though the price tag is believed to be around $1 trillion. Kind of two different approaches here between the Democrat and the Republican sides, Chip.
Oh, absolutely. And the big negotiating point is going to be that liability protections. I really think that that's going to be a sticking point for the Democrats. and I don't see the Republicans moving forward without it.
Well, according to a Purdue University CME Group survey, two-thirds of farmers surveyed say they believe more CFAP funding will be necessary. Meanwhile, 81% of farmers said they were either very concerned or somewhat concerned about the future viability of the U.S. ethanol industry. In a related note, Chip, EPA says as of May 21, the agency has received 27 SRE requests for the 2019 compliance year and one request for the 2020 compliance period. Those numbers are below years past, and EPA has pledged to address the requests in a timely manner. But, Chip, it's unclear how the 10th Circuit Court decision will impact their decision-making there at EPA.
Yeah, what we're watching for are those requests for waivers from 2014 compliance, 2015 compliance,
right,
so that they can string together those consecutive years. That's what they're trying to do now, so we got to watch out for that.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Yeah, we'll do this one. Iowa's Governor, Ag Secretary, and Senators are making the case for liquid egg producers to get their share of CFAP relief.
Yeah.
Iowa lawmakers and officials sent a letter to USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue on Tuesday asking to send more support for the state's egg farmers. And finally here, Chip, Tyson Foods reports 815 workers at its meatpacking facilities in western Iowa have tested positive for COVID-19, including nearly 600 employees at Tyson's Storm Lake pork processing plant that's scheduled to reopen today. Now, as of yesterday, quick update here, there were 6.3 million cases of COVID-19 from around the world, with the worldwide death toll now at more than 380,000. Chip.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Davis. Appreciate that. Yeah. Let's get to Margie Eckelkamp, editor of Ag Professional. How you doing, Margie?
Doing well this morning, Chip.
Good, good, good. So, ag retailers, they use events year-round, basically, sit down with potential customers, evaluate potential relationships, strengthen existing relationships, and those events, they're not happening this year. What are they doing to make up for it?
Yeah, we got news this week that the largest outdoor event for ag retailers, the Maggie Show, that's put on by the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association, it has been canceled. It's hosted in Bloomington every year and scheduled for that third week of August. And really the signature aspect of the Maggie Show is that it really brings together manufacturers of application equipment and that equipment used by ag retailers. And there's a ride and drive portion that really brings a lot of folks to the show. And with social distancing guidelines, they just can't guarantee that they can follow those in an applicator cab. Right. So they've made the decision to cancel that show. You know, I also got notice yesterday, that Berkey's, a Case IH dealership, you know, they've canceled customer events for this summer. And at the same time, you've got folks, you know, the American Society of Agronomy, they host their annual Sustainable Agronomy Conference. They've canceled the in-person event, which had typically been a day and a half event. And instead, they're going to be doing a virtual event and expanding it to 3 days, as well as a more national scope. So, you know, there are a lot of events that are being canceled, but a lot of events are changing and perhaps even being made broader, bigger, and better by going virtual.
That's interesting. You know, we've talked about it so many times on the show that we're pulling the future forward in a lot of ways as people become more comfortable with the technology that's available to them, Margie. This feels like another example of that. So,
I think you're right, Chip.
All right, Margie. Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Have a great day.
You too. That is Margie Eckelkamp, the editor of Ag Professional. Coming up next, we're going to have a conversation with Dan Hallstrom from the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This special edition of AgriTalk is supporting Pork Week, paying tribute to pork producers who bring lean and nutrient-rich pork to your table. Coverage brought to you by Merck, PIC, United Animal Health, Alltech Hubbard, and Hypor. Learn more at porkbusiness.com.
Hey, Davis.
Chip.
I saw a tweet this morning.
Okay.
That said it was something like the 70s were so weird that we had a disco duck and nobody blinked.
See, but that, if yeah. that were to reemerge, that would be precedented. It would have a precedent, right?
That's right. That so is many, exactly right.
If we
right.
could just get back to the precedents of the 70s.
So in other words, if the Disco Duck comes back, those of us with experience with the Disco Duck would know to run in the opposite direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We would be kings of the society.
Yes. Yes.
They
yes.
would flock
right.
to us for direction.
Yeah. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. It's Pork Week
Davis.
Here on Pork AgriTalk. Week. And I want to talk about
pork
exports.
Pork chops. Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about exports now with Dan Hallstrom. He is the CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. We're going to talk more. About more than just pork exports. I want to get beef in here, too. But, Dan, welcome back to AgriTalk. It's good to talk with you again.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. Glad that you could make the time for us. Let's focus on pork here to start, Dan. But, boy, I tell you, 2020 got off to a – it was like we had a running start on pork exports. And then, of course, we ran into some issues.
Yeah, the first quarter exports really were extremely solid, especially for pork. Record growth actually for both beef and pork. We had some tailwinds to start the year, none bigger than the Japan-U.S. ag agreement, which we saw definite results for both beef and pork into Japan. And, of course, the real story the first quarter for pork is China, where we're up three times compared to a year ago. But that being said, I throw some caution signs out because I think we'll have the April export numbers tomorrow, actually. Okay. But our expectations are that the growth rate's going to slow down a bit going into the second quarter.
Yeah. And it's that's all COVID-related, right?
Yeah, I think it's COVID-related on two fronts, actually.
Okay.
Number one is, of course, we had some supply chain challenges with absenteeism at pork plants and beef plants in March and April. That's part of it. Of course, we're seeing those numbers come back, well on the way back to normal now. But the other thing is the COVID impact on demand in specifically right now in Mexico and Central and South America. The Latin American countries are deep into the middle of the eye of the storm of food service and tourism shutdown. So we're going to see that probably impact us in the second quarter with those countries.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and with the jump in pork prices that we saw domestically, Dan, China's actually canceled some pork imports, but don't we expect China to be a positive demand story again in the second half of the year?
I think without a doubt. I mean,
yeah.
And I'm not sure how much pork's actually been canceled. I would imagine some of it's actually been delayed because of the supply disruptions more than canceled. I mean, we don't know for sure. But, yeah, you're exactly right. I think the overall supply and demand dynamics that were going on pre-COVID have not changed. I mean, they've had severe impact to their sow herd in China due to ASF. And when we come through the other side of the tunnel here, that situation really hasn't changed. So I see some increased demand, the second half of the year, without a doubt. One other thing I might add here, though, is it's not all bad. I mean, China is really an important market for us. But if you look vis-a-vis our global competition, the number one exporter into China is Europe. And about two-thirds of their exports go to Europe, whereas in the U.S., only about a third of our exports go there. So I think the fact that we as a country are diversified with our export base makes us a little less prone to some of these variations in demand week to week.
Yeah, good, good. Oh, hey, I got to go back to the comments that you were making about Mexico, Central America, some of the vacation destinations. In
right.
those areas where the food service demand has obviously fallen off a cliff, in the U.S., we did such a nice job of transitioning the demand for a lot of product away from restaurant and food service to retail, grocery, in-home cooking. Is there any evidence that that happened in some of these vacation destinations as well?
Yes, I think I think we're seeing it already down in Mexico and even into Central America as well. Places like Guatemala and Panama that are very dependent upon tourism as well. Now, the infrastructure is probably not as efficient as we are here, and especially if you compare it to U.S. And to Asia. So their ability to turn it around is probably a little more limited. But the trend lines are there. We're seeing online platforms just boom down there, both for retail and food service, for at-home delivery, for commonplace delivery, anything that can minimize person-to-person contact, and these e-commerce platforms are perfect for that. So this is a trend we've seen globally all through Asia, and we're seeing it down in Mexico and Latin America as well.
Okay. All right. Dan, talk about some of the cuts, some of the products that come off of pork and beef that maybe we don't see in our meat cases. I'm talking about those variety meats that are very popular in some of our export destinations. How important are they? How much value do they provide to carcass for beef and for pork?
Well, yeah, it's a good point. The key to maximizing value, in my opinion, is you got to maximize the value of the carcass. And, we have a lot of demand in the U.S. for middle meats, for example, on the beef side or for pork loins on the pork side. You have a lot of demand for ground beef in the U.S. These are not necessarily high demand items globally. There is some demand in some markets for these products, but a lot of the demand is the other cuts, and variety meats are definitely one of them. You look at places like Peru and a huge destination for beef tripe, down to Mexico, beef lips and tripe are very big there as well. China and Mexico are huge destinations for pork feet, pork stomachs, pork tongues, things like this. So it's really about putting the right cut into the right market to maximize value. And that's what you're seeing the packers and the exporters do every day. On a cut side, too, you look at things like short plates. Short plates would be devalued considerably if you were to put them into grinds here in the U.S. You can send them over to Japan, and it's the number one item in Japan is a beef short plate. So, and we're adding a lot of value to that. So this is the beauty of complementing the domestic and international demand to maximize the value of the carcass.
Yeah, yeah. All right. And every time we add on to the value with one of those variety cuts, it helps us out. Dan, back to China and the dealings with Hong Kong. Hong Kong had become a heck of a good beef importing destination, wasn't it?
Yes, it has been. But over the years, the last few years, on both beef and pork, we've seen a shift more away from Hong Kong and more directly into China. And there's still business that goes directly into Hong Kong and stays there, and that business is doing well. But the business that was transloading into China is now going direct. So I think the trend lines here are that what we're seeing in Hong Kong is a concern on many levels, without a doubt. But once again, the overall demand by far has been directly into China.
Yeah, okay. So do you think that this – how big of a impact is the situation between China and Hong Kong? Could that derail a lot of the progress that we've made?
Well, that's the question. It could. I mean, you got to be honest, it could. But I'm hopeful it's not going to. I mean, I think this China-U.S. phase one trade agreement is wonderful for agriculture, not only beef and pork, but soybeans, corn, other items as well. And it's not, of course, we all read about the volume commitments over the next 2 years, which are large. But I would argue that some of the other advancements we've made through this phase one agreement, such as market access on product mix, plant registrations, eliminating some of these non-tariff trade barriers was almost as big as the volume commitment. So we're very optimistic that this will stay intact and it'll benefit all of us in the long term.
All right, good stuff. Hey, Dan, I just got a message from Scott. He says a big thank you from Iowa Pork and Iowa Beef for all that you do at USMEF. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.
As your innovative and invested partner, Merck Animal Health sales and technical service teams are dedicated to the well-being of the swine industry and the people behind it. Merck Animal Health, driven by prevention.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, a lot of plus signs in the grains today. Some demand showing up.
Yeah, soybeans are pulling to the upside, up about a nickel here mid-morning, and we had some daily export sales, one cargo of old crop, two cargoes of new crop, all to unknown destinations. So there's, you know, speculation that's China after some of the talk on Monday that the Chinese were in buying soybeans out of the PNW for fall delivery.
Right. Right. It's good news. And wheat is making a nice recovery after some pressure yesterday. That's got to be helping corn.
Yeah. HRW market's leading there. And we've had both soybeans and wheat pulling to the upside. Corn hasn't, it's been tethered near unchanged, but just starting to see some plus signs in some of those contracts here. So maybe those other two markets will get corn off of unchanged here.
All right, very good. Let's hop over to the livestock trade. Some strength in live cattle futures, but not much. Not much is happening.
No, they're trying to pull to the upside, the back end of that market. Still showing a little bit of strength, but starting to weaken up a little bit in that nearby June contract. Not a whole lot going on. The cash market's wide again this week, so we continue to see those wide ranges on the cash trade week to week here. Quite a bit of disparity between the low end and the upper end of that range. The hog market, it's under some pretty heavy pressure in the June contract, lighter pressure as we get further out, but just a weak morning of trade so far in the hog market.
No doubt about it. We've also got Class 3 milk futures straight into the upside today. Thank you, Brian. That is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I am your host, Chip Flory. We're going to get this Farmer Forum started here. By the way, every Farmer Forum that we do is sponsored by the American Conservation Ag Movement. To learn more about it, go to www.agweb.com/ACAM. It is a national partnership designed to help all U.S. farmers more rapidly scale the adoption of conservation agriculture. Check it out. There's some good information there, no doubt about it. Okay, let's get this Farmer Forum in the middle of Pork Week started. We've got Randy Francis, hog producer, row crop producer over in eastern Iowa. How you doing, Randy?
Very good, Chip. Beautiful morning here in northeast Iowa. Just spraying away, actually. We got a sunshiny day. The wind's down, and the crop is growing. You can almost watch it grow right now.
Yeah, no doubt. You missed the rain that went through last night, right?
Yep, stayed north of us, about an hour north. We had a few fields just kind of get a trace to a tenth of an inch. But other than that, beautiful morning.
Yeah, last night went north of us. This morning went south of us. So we're in that spot in a stripe that can keep at it here this morning. Okay, let's also bring in A.V. Roth, president of the National Pork Producers Council. He's a hog producer over in Wisconsin. A.V., it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
Hey, man, we're doing okay. The bigger question is, how are you doing? How are you holding up through all this?
It could be a lot better, but it definitely could be worse, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I said at the start of the show, AV, that there's no amount of training that you could have received to prepare yourself for what you've been throwing into with this. But, man, you keep showing up. You keep adding the perspective and the insights that people need to hear, and you keep offering encouragement to your fellow hog producers out there. So, hey, just keep it up. I want to get that out of the way right up front. Just keep it up. You're doing a great job.
MPBC and the staff is doing everything they possibly can to help farmers in this unprecedented time.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's talk about your operation. What are you doing this morning, AV?
This morning, just sent out, had some extra wean pigs. We usually do wean pigs here, and didn't have a place for them. But found a guy that takes 300 feeder pigs, so I housed them in actually my isolation barn for the last 5 weeks and just got rid of them.
Yeah,
we got everything full here. We're backed up as much as I can, like all producers. They're doing everything they can to put pigs. You know, they're trying to delay that decision to have to euthanize, as put it off as far as they can. That's about all we can do. We got to get help. We got to get this thing through.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The guys are getting creative in where they're putting pigs and doing whatever they can to not have to make that decision to euthanize pigs, right, Randy?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, we're very fortunate that a lot of our sites, we have a couple different barns for every group. So what we're doing is we're trying to market as much as we can, and then we're crowding over to the one site or the one barn. Then we're bringing the wean pigs into the other site. We actually just on Tuesday this week, we emptied out our first complete site from the time they've been double stocked up for 6 or 8 weeks now. And we actually were able to get the market pigs out for the first time. And, you know, it's quite remarkable how well those pigs did, you know, being on the whole diets like that. And, you know, we've been able to, for the health of the animal has been remarkable how well they've been able to do it. So,
yeah,
you know, thanks to our nutritionists and thanks to everybody that's given us guidance on the best way to achieve that. And the pigs have responded quite nicely. So,
yeah, I was talking to your dad about that the other day, Randy, about how impressed he is by the ability of those to keep those animals, not just keep their weight gain down, but to keep them healthy for as long as we have in those conditions. I think it's just a huge compliment to your whole team that you were talking about there. And AV, that's the thing. It's, you do everything that you can independently, but you've got to rely on the team, because we're kind of making this up as we go on how to deal with these backlogs, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these producers have pushed off that grave decision as long as they can on that farm. But here's the problem. For those producers that have had to make that grave decision on their farm, they've, you know, that's a financial decision. And right now, there's not money for compensation for those euthanized livestock.
Right.
You know, they basically have dug, you know, if they have to make that grave decision, they dug the grave for themselves. And without immediate help from the government to help dig them out, that these farmers that are deeply rooted in their family heritages on these farms may be gone forever. And there's one bright point out there, that HEROES Act that has been passed through the House. Now, I'm not trying to say support the whole thing, but the ag provisions in there are great for the producer.
Yeah.
The compensation, there is compensation for euthanized livestock without caps.
Right.
There's expanded direct payments. There's also something that's really needed for these producers that have had to make those grave decisions on the farm. There is mental health assistance for those farmers. I mean, I've listened to hundreds of calls from producers, and I don't know what to say. The same thing here. I've had to euthanize some wean pigs because didn't have any place for them, and it's not good. It's not good at all.
Right. And AV, this isn't one of those things that 6 months from now we can look back at it and say, wow, boy, those guys really took a financial hit. We need to do something to help them out. We need to do something now to help those producers.
If it's not now, those graves that are dug, they're there forever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough situation, Randy, and let's talk about your packing plant situation, Randy. It seems like in our area, we're obviously not back to 100% capacity, but doggone, they're doing pretty good, aren't they?
Yeah, and I would like to commend, we sell everything to Tyson Foods in Waterloo, is where we've always went for the last 25, 30 years that I know there's been a hog on our farm. They've all went to Waterloo. And a lot of that's just for location. We're 30, 35 minutes right up the road, so it's very convenient for us. Right now, we've been able to get loads into Columbus Junction. We've had a couple loads into Storm Lake. Now, with the Storm Lake plant kind of being in a disruption, that's really put a lot more stress on Waterloo. So we're back kind of to the point where we don't know when our next load's going to be again, just until they get that Storm Lake load back in. We were able to get two loads out so far this week, but they're definitely feeling the stress all over the throughout their corporate or their operations. So
yeah, no doubt about it. AV, what's the situation up there? How much finishing hogs come out of your area, and where do they go?
In the surrounding few counties, there's very few that come out. I am from Wisconsin, the dairy state. But here in Wisconsin, they're doing a great job with the number of butcher hogs we have. We're able to get them into like local markets and stuff. Now I know Iowa and Minnesota that they've done that as much as they can, and the thousands of hogs that are getting euthanized that cannot get into the chain is kind of where I'm stuck on, and that's the number that we gotta get those farmers help. And if whoever's listening here, if you can call into your senators and really support getting those the ag provisions for that Heroes Act passed, would be a great help for producers.
Yep. Yeah, we've talked about that a lot. Colin Peterson was responsible for a lot of that language, right, AV?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it looks to me like he did a bang-up job writing it. And that meeting that he had in Worthington, it obviously had a big impact on him, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And how could it not? How would you like to sit there and see animals that should be in the food chain that China needs that pork, they need it. And we couldn't get them through our processing chain. And it was all because of the COVID-19 and the scare and that, it's not the producer's fault at all. There was not a supply problem before COVID-19.
Yep, exactly. Hey, from the farrowing side of things, AV, what have you heard about the size of the sow herd? Have we liquidated many sows?
It's hard for me to speculate how many. I do know producers have sold out. I don't know how many. You can look at the supply chain or try to get a load of sows in, and you can tell how many are being liquidated. They're full up, just like anything else.
Right, right. Yeah, no doubt. Randy, that could have an impact on our total supplies come fourth quarter.
Yeah, that's right. And, I'd like to comment a little bit more what AV was talking about with the euthanization. And, the best place for a market-ready hog is through the packing plant. I wonder if we don't need to go to our legislators and we need to have a conversation with them that they need to have the incentivized to euthanize that wean pig. And that's a lot easier to handle versus a market-ready hog. It's a guy could easily get that through, and the costs aren't there on a weaned pig versus they are on a market-ready hog, too. So.
Okay, you know what? I want to talk more about these messages to USDA Secretary Perdue, to the lawmakers out there. We're going to do that next on the Farmer Forum with Randy and AV.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on. For our family and yours.
Welcome back to Ag We're Talking to Farmer Forum, sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. Big shout out to the foundational partners of the program, Trust in Food, Farm Journal Foundation, USDA's NRCS, American Farmland Trust, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, National Corn Growers, National Pork Board, Sanderson Farm, Syngenta, The Nature Conservancy, and Valent. We've got a farmer forum going. Randy Francis from Iowa, A.V. Roth from Wisconsin, who is also the president of the National Pork Producers Council. And A.V., when I mentioned NRCS there as a sponsor of ACAM, if you do have to dispose of hogs, you need to have a conversation with the folks at NRCS, right?
Yes, absolutely. There is some money through NRCS that will help with the with the euthanize and disposal of these animals, and it is something that is very needed and very appreciative for these farmers. That people need to know that and need to reach out there. They also need to make sure that they are talking to their states. Talk to the state Pork Producer Association, and you need to be keeping track of any animals you euthanize, and so that when MPPC and work with the governments, get money for these pigs that are being euthanized, that you'll be able to hopefully be able to make these farmers not whole, but give them a peace of mind.
Right. Give them some relief. Give them some relief in here. Yeah, it's much needed. Randy, interesting concept that you had there at the end of the last segment. Take the pressure off of the supply side by relieving the pressure up front rather than on the back end when those hogs are ready to go to market.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, the last number I heard were 2.7 million pigs behind in the packing plant. So, you know, if you take our average kill from a year ago, you're talking 6 to 7 days of production we're behind. Well, you tell me when we're going to get 6 or 7 days. We're already killing every Saturday. We're already killing, you know, so are we going to make these workers work on Sundays? I don't think so. That's a good way to not have a workforce then at all. You know,
right.
We got to expect to have time off and spend time with their families and like that. So, you know, if we can slow down the supply coming in, whether it might take 6 months, but the way I see it on our farm, it's probably going to take us 4 to 5 months before we're probably back up running as we'd like to be anyway. So if we can eliminate that down the road, that's going to help a lot.
Yep. AV, I think that's part of the issue here. There's a misunderstanding, I think, of how quickly or how much time it's going to take to get current with our marketing situation again. It's just going to take time, and that's one of the reasons that we need some relief now.
Yeah, I mean, guys, we're still falling. Somewhere in between 150,000 to 200,000 pigs a week, we're still falling behind.
Right.
I have no idea when we're going to get caught up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's talk to USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue, AV. What message does he need to hear from pork producers?
The message that he needs to hear is that we, the pork producers, we need money now. These producers that have had to euthanize on their farms, that, you know, and with the Defense Production Act, I think they have the right. They can come in and do these things. They need the money now, not September, not August. It's too late. Those producers are going to be gone. The quicker we get this money, and we greatly appreciated the money that came out, the $1.6 billion, and the producers needed it. It's helped, and they've taken some of the caps off, so it's helped more producers. But we need that. We need more. Those producers that have had to euthanize, they didn't have a choice. Those pigs no longer could go to market, and they are going to lose their farms because of this. We need those things that are in the HEROES Act and the egg provision side. We need them, and we need them now. The longer we wait, the more farms that will never come back.
All right. Randy, talk to your lawmakers. What do they need to hear from producers?
From the producer side, you know, we appreciate everything they've done. And like AV's been saying, you know, we need the help. But we also need to be diligent on the future. We need to make sure that if we do get a second wave of this come fall, that we're prepared. Because just when we think we're almost recovering, now the second wave comes in and now we're back into it. And another thing I'd like to remind people, you know, from the consumer side, that we are bringing a safe, affordable product to the marketplace. And, you know, just I don't want them to hear that the farmers are getting all this help and then they think we're just doing it for the handouts of this. This is very similar to what people are getting for that check from the COVID check, the household check. It's just making us whole as an operation. The small business owners, the SBA loans, it's a very similar situation as the small businesses are receiving on that end. So it's just kind of what we're all going through right now.
Exactly. Exactly, Randy. Good point. Good point. And AV, he brings up that message to consumers. What message have you got for the consumers out there?
This is real simple for me. There isn't a person in this world that cares more about the animals that they work with, that provide their living, than that farmer raising them. Those farmers, because of COVID-19, have had to do horrific things on their farms. That's the last thing they ever wanted to do, and that's why they're pushing it off as long as they can. They just want to get back to having the farmer's dream of being able to put pork on their plate, their family's plate, your plate, and to help feed this world.
Yeah. AV, stay strong, my friend. It's not an easy position. We feel for you.
I feel for all the producers out there. Everybody needs this.
Absolutely. That's AV Roth, Wisconsin producer and the president of the National Pork Producers Council. Randy, thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Stay safe, everyone.
Yeah, that's Randy Francis from Eastern Iowa. All right, thanks for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon, Dan Huber from the Huber Report. And tomorrow morning, National Pork Board CEO Bill Even, Circe Peoples from the Texas Cattle Feeders, and I'm going to be cooking with the boys right here on AgriTalk.